We've had our safety briefing, so we'll move on to the agenda. There are two key items today. One, Mr. Dougherty is going to update us on progress made in addressing the FTA safety audit that was done recently. We'll talk about that. And Chief Taborn, while this isn't the normal month for security, we thought it would be a good time to update ourselves on Metro bus security and the many initiatives that are going there. As I said, we'll have two presentations, and I would ask that questions occur at the end of each presentation. I think we can stay to our schedule, maybe even beat it a bit and get ourselves back on time. Let's begin with the approval of the minutes.
So moved.
Without objection, the minutes of the previous meeting are approved, and approval of the agenda, the two items.
So moved.
Again, without objection, the agenda is approved. So, as I said, the first item is the FTA safety audit. Jim Dougherty is going to bring us up to date on that. If you recall, this was requested by members of Congress, particularly Senator Mikulski, after the passage of the act that gave safety jurisdiction to the FTA. So take advantage of that to look at where we are. It was a very intense process over a very short period of time, but the understanding I have is that the FTA people got all the information they needed in that short period of time, working with us, working with the TOC. They came back with various recommendations, and I think we're making a lot of progress. So while their final report didn't come out till November, after the August audit, we had begun immediately on working on what we felt would be the recommendations and have made a lot of progress on it. So I'd like Mr. Dougherty to cover those findings and bring us up to date. I also would note, I think it's in the first slide, the FTA comment that what we've done represents a great start on safety, but it is a fragile foundation unless we continue our efforts and continue the progress that we've made. Mr. Dougherty?
Thank you, Chairman Downey, and good morning again, members of the board. As Mr. Downey had mentioned, this audit was conducted in August, actually August 20th through the 24th. FTA sent a fairly large team, as well as WMATA, supported their efforts with several folks and produced just about 800 documents for them to review, which was certainly significant from the time before. They did note from their audit that they conducted in December 2009, published their report in March of 2010, all 10 of their recommendations were closed, and they were happy certainly with the progress that had been made at that point in time. And through that recognition, project not quite, but you know, that they had noted that considerable progress was made in strengthening safety in the organization. However, we still remained, you know, fragile, and they had noted some of the things that had been done with the safety program, the good faith challenge as part of the roadway worker protection, the 24/7 employee hotline, as well as our work that we were starting to embark on or have been embarking on the fatigue risk management system. They, at the end of their audit, if you will, and completion of the final report from November 28th, they had identified six recommendations. And of those six, we have been working very diligently on those from the time actually prior to the audit, as we're always working on improving our safety. But some of them, actually, we are moving and expect closure shortly. To begin with, complete final investigation reports. They had specifically noted certain investigations that I'll call high visibility incidents that had occurred. All of the reports requested have been completed and submitted, approved by the TOC or adopted by the TOC, and actually provided to the FTA yesterday. So all the reports are done and have been submitted to the FTA for their review. Their second of the six recommendations was to conduct an assessment regarding the heat kink, if you remember from the West Hyattsville derailment. That assessment has been conducted. The TOC accepted the report back on December 20th, and we are currently in the process of drafting a scope of services for an independent consultant to come in and look at our process. The third recommendation was the hazard assessment to protect workers. As you know, we've had a roadway worker protection program in place that's being used and modeled throughout the country, but we did go, we did visit all of our sites, and found that from the recommendations that include everything from, you know, signage, to make sure that's in place in the rail shops, audible horn blowing procedures, things along that line, to have external doors so you can get out but not back in at our emergency egress. That's all in place, and we have checked and rechecked to ensure that those practices that are in place currently. They ask for a safety analysis regarding the rail car doors. That analysis was completed, and it was adopted by the TOC just January 7th, and that's also been submitted to the FTA as of yesterday. They've asked for a demonstration following up on the hazard management module of our SMS. We have scheduled that demonstration with them towards the latter part of February to their scheduling, as well as towards the end of January, we're meeting with them to actually go through the progress that we've made. And lastly, as you all receive our monthly report that we send to the TOC executives and the TOC executive committee, we've been asked to revise that format, make it a little bit more readable, trackable, and actually submit that so the board has that information, and we are working with the TOC to draft that format going forward, and we expect to have that you know, done certainly from our end within the next 30 days. So we do have a format. We've been meeting with the TOC. TOC and us have had communications, and we'll also share that with the FTA, and I'm sure any of the board members that have any input to that, we're certainly happy to hear that. But we want to, you know, look at that. We don't have that many corrective actions from where we started, so we feel that that'll be something that we'll be able to do and track and make it easier for you to read as well as ourselves. So from their six recommendations, we feel we've made really good progress. We have worked with the TOC, we've worked with the FTA, and we're going to continue in that effort to get these all the items that they've identified closed out in a timely, very timely fashion, as we feel that we're about to close out on four of them pending the FTA's acceptance. So we will continue our effort. I wanted to provide you an update on the NTSB recommendations. As you are aware, there have been 27 total NTSB recommendations from 2006, and as Mr. Downey's pointed out, a few of them were from the 2004 Woodley Park, but actually NTSB didn't make those recommendations until 2007. But seven have been closed to date by the NTSB. We have 13 submitted that we're waiting to hear back from the NTSB for consideration of closure. Even one of those 13, which we submitted, was you know, replacement of the number 8 mainline turnout. So that's been completed, as you're aware, back in June, and that one we expect should certainly be closed as part of those 13. And the remaining seven are in progress, and we are still working diligently to close those out. On our accidents and incident investigations, which is one of the actually recommendations made from the 2010 FTA report, they were satisfied with the progress we made, but wanted to show you, you know, a chart that shows the number of accidents that actually we have worked on, starting with a backlog of over 300 accidents. And 102 have been adopted by the TOC just in 2012. So all in all, 311 incident accident reports have been adopted, have been completed. We have six remaining today, and we are current. The preliminary reports of those six, four of the preliminary reports have been submitted to the TOC for the preliminaries have been submitted to the TOC, and then we have the time as the investigation is ongoing to submit the final reports, and we have two of those six that are final and have been submitted to the TOC for adoption. So actually, to date, we are down to four accidents, and we are caught up and current with all of our accident reporting to date, so we're very pleased with that activity also. Corrective action plans, as we keep you up to date on these, you know, we started with over 500 corrective actions. Today, we're down to just a little over 100. And of those 100 that you'll see on the next chart, 45 of those over 100 are in the acceptable range. In other words, they're ones that, you know, that could be lived with, but we want to deal with. Maybe a procedure that needs updated, something along that line. We have 61 that are in our undesirable category that we continue to work on, but we have mitigating practices in place to address those, and we only have two that are considered unacceptable, and that deals with the two of the NTSB recommendations for the safety analysis. Once that analysis is complete, then completing those recommendations from the analysis. So a whole lot of activity has continued to go. We're certainly moving quickly, certainly as quickly as we can. The dedication, the support from the board and the general manager is certainly affording us that opportunity. Some of our next steps, as you know, as I've mentioned, we'll continue to work with the NTSB, continue to work with the FTA and the TOC, and continue to build on those relationships. We're replacing equipment as it's aging in our State of Good Repair program. We're working on mitigating human factors, including our fatigue risk management program and our close call program. So just with all this activity, that's where we're moving forward. We want to continue to promote good safety practices, as we will, and safety awareness, you know, throughout the organization as we enhance and build on our safety culture. And certainly I'm pleased to actually, you know, report the activity that has transpired, as well as even a report from the FTA. We welcome that report and welcome the FTA to come in and, you know, look at areas that we can improve, as we will always do, and certainly would be willing to take any questions that you may have.
Questions for Mr. Doherty? I have a couple, but you go ahead.
Mine's more a comment than a question, because I do think this report really does reflect the progress, and I think the last statement in your next steps is the one that we really are working toward. And when you talk about a fragile safety foundation, it's really a solid and sustainable and pervious one. Having listened to all of these challenges that we've had in prior years, the relationship building is really the one that I think is so important, such that the culture of safety in the organization really becomes a sustainable one. So I think it's been a great deal of progress that's been made. And that, as you say, we'll continue to have the investigations, but that's where we reach conclusions and solutions, and that the organization really sees the priority for it.
I also want to recognize the progress, but I also want to recognize the general manager's leadership. Every safety culture starts with the entire organization knowing that the executive in charge of the organization takes it seriously, and it's part of accountability throughout the entire system. And I don't think we'd be making that progress without Rich's stalwart leadership and consistent leadership over safety, and I just wanted to take the opportunity to recognize it. But I also have a question. We had a report not too long ago about the management of hazardous materials within the authority and compliance with EPA requirements. And I was curious as to whether or not, as a safety issue, we track those compliance issues around hazardous material storage, disposal, et cetera. They are a safety issue, and I don't know if they're on the list of...
They're not in the same list, no.
Not in the same list, but they're not a reportable item here.
It would depend if it's certainly on the rail. It is one of the 21 elements of the System Safety Program plan, and there are audits. We have our own internal audits. In fact, actually, the TOC is asked to audit that next month. You know, we've had the recent OIG audit that you're familiar with, and that takes in, you know, issues were identified from 2011, 2012. Anything noted has been addressed, and I think the important part to know is that there were no violations of law, some practices that we were not following of our own, but we are working and we have remedied those concerns.
After, Mr. Chairman, after the talk review and a staff review, it would be great to have that be part of at least an information item for the committee.
Okay. Other questions? I have a couple, and I certainly share Mr. Down's view that this has started from the top with general manager, CEO. I think it started above that with the board, in terms of our commitment that this should be the safety agency, the agency around the country that is the safety model, and we really do need to get there. A couple of comments. On the FTA audit, as I mentioned earlier, that was responsive to a request from Senator Mikulski, and I would hope that she's apprised of not only the fact that it's completed, but the fact that we've taken it seriously and implemented it. I think she deserves credit for asking, but she should also know what the answer is. On the tracking matrix, I'm really pleased to see that we're going to redesign it. But I have to note, over the holidays, I got out my magnifying glass and read it. And I was concerned, and I have provided staff some questions, that it appeared, it may not be true, but it appeared that as the calendar moved from 2012 to 2013, many of the items that are harder and more difficult to resolve had their completion dates moved from 2012 to 2013 or 2014. And I just identified about 25 or 30 where I'd like at some point, I don't know if we need a presentation, but some hard evidence that those are in fact the deadlines, that we won't see them slip a year each year.
Yes, we will get back to you on that.
Yeah, I think that would be helpful. And one final question. Could you, for the committee's benefit, describe what an incident investigation entails and how you use them as part of our safety program?
Certainly, happy to. Actually, on the rail side, there is a requirement under the 49-659 rule for the state safety oversight. The bus is a little different at this time, depending on where MAP 21 goes with that, but we treat them all the same as far as our investigations. On the rail side, we have a window of notifying the Tri-State Oversight Committee, typically as quickly as possible that we know something, but within a two-hour window. Then we submit to them a preliminary report within 72 hours. However, they have most of the information prior to that. After the preliminary report is submitted, then if we cannot complete a final report within 30 days, we submit a status or at least a status phone call informing them of where we're at. Alongside of that, since we are in Washington, we do get calls, so we update not by requirement, but the FTA and the NTSB, even for non-reportable NTSB items, more for their information. And if we don't, they call us if they see it on the news. So we have that little extra care there, if you will. But while that's going on, we are immediately investigating what has happened, looking at all of the factors, everything, you know, whether it's a procedural factor, whether it's an issue with equipment, with the infrastructure, any human factors elements, what is the employee's schedules that were involved, not only the employees involved, but other employees that may have some relationship. We conduct interviews of all parties involved, typically, and now as far as the safety, and it's not always the safety department, it depends on the threshold and the severity, if it's the operations group that provides that information to us. That information is also put into the safety measurement system in the accident incident logs. We continue on our investigation. Sometimes we may have to bring in outside experts or subject matter experts. That's often done through Dave's group for metallurgical testing for such things as friction rings. We may bring in other human factors experts. So that delays, if you know, will the progress in completing the report. But in the interim, we are informing any of the regulatory agencies, we're informing management, and when the reports are complete, we share them, you know, internally with the staff that would be involved, with many of the executive teams. We may put out as a result of that, even in the interim before it's done, a lessons learned document, a safety bulletin. The operations group may draft a procedure, a standard operating procedure, an interim rule, or a temporary rule, things along that line, so it keeps moving quite along. It has quite a resource use, if you will, in doing that, but we feel that's important. And then as we're learning these facts, we're looking at where we can implement corrective actions. What can we do? What did we learn from the incident? What can we do to get better and ensure that we don't have a reoccurrence of the same event or anything that may be identified, even though not related to the accident, but you learn as a result of that accident investigation, even without the relationship to that accident. We prepare the corrective actions. That's tracked through the system, through the SMS, through our COC monthly reporting process. And then, as you're aware, you get the monthly report of the corrective actions. And we do the same thing along with our bus side. you know, moving, you know, as we move forward, whether it's a bus fire or something along that line, maybe not the best example, but we have investigated a few of those. And it's pretty much all the way to closeout, and we track it to closeout, and then we also follow up. We like to, we want a trend. We want to look at where we may have, you know, reoccurring incidents, and we certainly look for any trending, any hot spots that maybe we need to make improvements, be it in training, or be it, you know, possibly if it's on the bus side, a route, something along that line, that we can look for an improvement. And that's...
So it's all part of our continuous effort.
Absolutely. It's a continuing process.
We continue to improve on that record.
Right. And then we look away for safety awareness, for promoting safety awareness to avoid, you know, an occurrence.
Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Doherty? Not, thank you. The other item for this morning, I requested that Chief Taborn give us a briefing on the issue of bus security. It's been very much in the public's attention. I think some very positive things have been developed and are going forward, but I think we need to know how they will be continued and how we'll measure their success. So I'll turn it over to the Chief.
Yes, thanks very much, Mr. Chairman, for requesting that we come before the board and provide you with an update of the things that we're doing to enhance safety, primarily for the buses. We also want to thank D.C. Council Member Bowser and D.C. WMATA Board Member Bowser for the outstanding work she's done in bringing constituents together, both internal to WMATA, the community leaders, the citizens, the youth, the union, and the police agencies that represent the District of Columbia to come up with some recommendations and solutions to enhance the security posture for bus-related crimes. I'll be talking about that a little bit more in the presentation. This map depicts areas of concentration of Part 1 crimes. And so for the benefit of this discussion, from January 2012 through November 2012, we're talking about 123 Part 1 crimes. And as we define the Part 1 offenses, they're defined by the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and they include crimes against persons, which are homicides, rape, robberies, and aggravated assaults, and the crimes against property, which includes burglary, theft, motor vehicle theft. And as you can see, let's talk about, for the benefit of the media, which we rely on to tell the story, and quite often when we report out on crime, we often start by saying one crime on the metro is one crime too many. The general manager holds me and my team, as well as other people within WMATA, accountable to reduce crime. As a matter of fact, he is adamant about reducing it further than it was the previous year. But oftentimes, the depiction of crime on metro is not reported in context. And so when I started off by saying 123 crimes, maybe many of you may not know that those crimes represent, for the Commonwealth of Virginia, three Part 1 crimes. That includes Fairfax, Arlington, Alexandria, three crimes in the Commonwealth of Virginia for Part 1 for buses. In the state of Maryland, to include Prince George's County and Montgomery County, we're talking about 21 Part 1 crimes, and the remaining 99 are those crimes that predominantly are in the District of Columbia. But even within the District of Columbia, or throughout the entire area, there are 66 of those 123 Part 1 crimes that are thefts, and that's a stipulation of the FBI. So whether the value of what's stolen is $2, it's still classified as a Part 1 crime. Snatches of the iPhones that's prevalent in this area is also a Part 1 crime that's calculated and reported. Pickpockets, it's also one of those Part 1 crimes, and thefts of bicycles that may be on the bike racks, on the racks of the buses, are those Part 1 crimes. So you're talking about 66 of the 123, which leaves about 57 that are more of the serious crimes, homicides, aggravated assaults, assault with a deadly weapon. And so as you can see, the majority of the Part 1 crimes is localized in the District of Columbia. And even within the District of Columbia, it is relegated to three of the districts, of which the Metropolitan Police has seven police districts. And so the first district, the fifth district, And the seventh district. The first district encompasses Gallery Place, Metro Center, the buses that travel those areas, the fifth district, Northeast Washington, D.C., and the seventh district, Southeast D.C. And the three most prevalent areas in the D.C.'s seven districts, if you look at the same crime that's in those particular areas, you'll find that there were a total of 14,000 Part 1 crimes alone in those areas. And so when we look at the 123 for the entire system, and then we look at where we dedicate a lot of our resources to those areas, and again, with the work of Councilmember Bowser, we are working to enhance and improve that security, you're looking at a small percentage of those Part 1 crimes that we're talking about. And when the crimes in these three particular districts are added up, it represents for Metro 0.05, which is 0.05% of the Part 1 crimes. And so when we look at the overall Part 1 crimes for the entire Metro system, both bus and rail, for calendar year 11, we looked at 1,898. And so when you compare only those three districts in the Metropolitan Police, not even counting Prince George's County or the National Capital Regions, you're talking about maybe 75, 80,000 Part 1 crimes. And so when we make the assertion that you're much safer on the Metro than you are in the neighborhoods that the Metro serves, we think that we are fairly depicting the status of the crime. But again, one crime is one crime too many, and it's our effort in working with the local jurisdictional agencies that we reduce it even further. The next slide depicts relative to consistency of Part 1 crimes on buses over the last 2 years. And the chart is a measure of crime based on million of bus riders, because we have over 300, 400,000 people that ride the bus each day. Jack Requa has over 1,500 buses, 12,000 bus stops that we are responsible for. And so in 2011, the average Part 1 crime rate on the bus was 0.55 per million riders. In 2012, we did experience an increase. However, the average Part 1 crime rate is still about one crime per millions of riders. And so we think that, again, the victims or the people who are assaulted, who are the victims of those crimes, we know that it means something a little bit more personal to them, and we approach that from that standpoint. When we express in a different term, as noted on the slide, the average of Part 1 crimes per month in 2011 was seven. Seven Part 1 crimes per month. And in 2012, it was an average of 11 crimes per month. And in 2012, January through November, there were, as indicated earlier, 123 Part 1 crimes. And in 2011, there were 79, which was an increase of about roughly 44 crimes. And while the numbers of crimes are not large, we don't want any crime at all in our system, as attested to the efforts of the members of the police department, the leadership here with Mr. Sauls, but we are encouraged by the results of the recent customer satisfaction survey. Metro customers expressed a high level of satisfaction with security on all modes of transportation, bus, train, in the stations, and at bus stops. And as a matter of information, when compared to other transit properties, Metro rated higher than any other transit property in the United States. The next slide is a slide that depicts the Part 2 crimes. The Part 2 crimes are those types of crimes that are most prevalent, and they are involved with destruction of property, which would include the rock throwings, or intentionally vandalizing property, graffiti, writing up on the seats, things of that nature. In January through November, there were 300 of those Part 2 crimes in the Metro bus. In 2012, if I'm not mistaken, there were 278. So there was a 22 crime reduction from 11 to 12. Let's see, simple assault can be described as an unwanted touching. That makes up a lot of the crimes that the bus operators are subjected to, whether it's spitting, whether it's throwing a cup, water, other items that they sometimes throw on our bus operators, and that was 22% of the Part 2 crimes. I'm sorry, 28% were the destruction of properties, the throwing the rocks. 40% of the Part 2 crimes were the simple assaults involving the throwing of objects at bus operators. And all other Part 2 crimes, which accounted for 32%, and those types of crimes that were possession of drugs, disorderly conduct, threats, and fare evasion, just to name a few. It's noteworthy that we averaged about two less Part 2 crimes per month in 2012 versus 2011. Now, the next slide is something that I want to discuss, what we are doing to focus on bus crime. Again, I can't say enough about the collaboration and participation with the Metropolitan Police Department, of which we, I'm in contact with Chief Lanier probably at least once or twice a week. My leadership team is in contact with her deputy chief, so every time that there's an incident involving bus or rail, we're in direct contact with them. And so for the last year or more, we have started placing more uniformed Metro bus enforcement officers on buses, which is a change from our history use, because previously we used predominance of casual clothes, but we found from our bus operators and our citizens that they were more like to see a uniformed person on the bus than a person in casual clothes, and that person would only be revealed when someone is committing a crime. There are two schools of thoughts for patrol strategies, one suggesting that uniform officers prevent crime from happening, and the other using casual clothes to catch criminals in the act of committing a crime. And we are trying to strike a balance between both of those. Over the last year, we've conducted 8 to 10 high-intensity targeted enforcement events per month, and these, what we call heights, are scheduled events to patrol specific hotspots of locations utilizing both uniform and casual clothes officers and a show of additional police vehicles along the identified bus routes. And again, that has been quite successful. Something that's relatively new that was spearheaded by the TSA is what we call Bus Safe. And that's a multi-jurisdictional bus safety and counterterrorism effort that is localized. It started in Portland, Chicago, Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., and it's a template that was done with RailSafe, where the Northeast Corridor, they were showing a force on any Amtrak, any transit agencies that was up and down the East Coast. That was expanded to be national, and we're experimenting the same thing with BusSafe. So we reach out to Fairfax County, Arlington County, for those buses that travel in the metropolitan area, and dedicate a day that we will show enforcement efforts on those. And again, that has been very effective. We've hired the 32 additional police officers, thanks to the board and the general manager. They are in training now, and they will be available by the latter part of this year to go out and add assistance to our bus routes and work with the Metro Bus Enforcement. We're using sworn members from all areas of the police department right now to assist in providing a more visible presence on our buses. So those people who are assigned administrative tasks, we're paying overtime to officers as a result of the efforts identified from Ms. Bowser, and they're working with the Metropolitan Police. We're working with the Metropolitan Police so that they can identify some bus routes. We can identify some areas so that we are not duplicating the efforts, but we are doing it in concert. Metro Transit Police mobile patrol officers are encouraged to follow buses on their normal bus routes and board as many as 3 to 4 buses per shift. We've gotten favorable results from not only the customers, but as well as the bus operators by doing this. The Metro Transit Police continues to partner with the Metropolitan Police on a daily basis through our daily youth conference call to provide real-time sharing of information. So when we know that there's a fight that's going to take place, and it may start out at Minnesota Avenue because you have a convergence of over 1,000 kids, you know, waiting. And so when we get that information, we can effectively take actions to prevent those things, because they're the same kids that will ultimately ride the buses. Finally, Chief Lanier issued a teletype directive to our entire department, encouraging uniform officers to ride Metro bus or trains to their beat assignments or to court. And over the next several weeks, the Metro Transit Police will work with Treasury to issue smart trip cards to local police officers in the National Capital Region, providing non-uniform officers the ability to ride the bus. And so they will tap their card and ride the bus just as any other citizens, and take actions when deemed appropriate. The next slide is shortly after the recent town meeting held by Ms. Bowser, the Metro Transit Police established a targeted patrol overtime detail, and approximately 15 police officers were riding the buses in the evenings. And when you go back to those depictions of the map, we concentrated our efforts in those areas that we have the problems at, and they have been very effective. Again, we are paying overtime for that until the arrival of the officers after they graduate from school. For several years, we've met each month at safety meetings with bus operators in each division, working again with Ms. Jeter from Local 689 to listen to concerns and complaints from their bus operators. They are very vocal and sort of lively meetings that we are engaged in. Sometimes the perception is that the Metro Transit Police really don't care or don't respond, and what we try to identify is that with 1,500 square miles that we covered, you are more apt to get a local jurisdictional officer responding to a call on the bus than you are Metro Transit Police. That's just the reality of the way things are. But we are trying to be as receptive in gathering information, finding out if there are problems, getting a new report form that guides us into identifying locations and the types of crimes that we may be experiencing, or the bus operators may be experiencing. Over the last few months, Metro has conducted youth forums to learn more about the current issues with both the youth who ride our systems to school and the adults who travel at the same times. And further, the Transit Police has partnered with marketing to establish a youth program which will encourage two-way communications, demonstrate types of appropriate riding behavior, establish respect between our young riders and Metro employees. And we will continue to work with bus employees to help determine the best course of action when dealing with unruly or uncooperative customers. Now, this next slide is one in which Jack Requis, if he's here, Jackie Jeter, who provided a statement about the bus shields, if they would join me, if they're here. Okay. Jackie, I don't want to read your statement, but if you want to read your own statement, we've worked diligently together in addressing a host of different things. And I know on July 19th, the bus operator focus group was conducted at the Southern Avenue Division. Approximately 20 bus operators were in attendance, and the operators unanimously expressed that they strongly dislike the shields. And again, what has developed recently is something that I don't want to misquote. So if we can read this. Okay, and this is from the president of the union. Prior conversation on last Thursday, this email is the official statement of the union concerning bus protection and the usage optional shields. Local 689 has and will continue to be a true instigator of promoting effective, reliable bus safety. We have demanded proactive cooperation from all entities responsible for protecting Metro employees. ATU Local 689 has continued to request the installation of usage optional shields. Although we clearly understand that installing the usage optional shields, we clearly understand that buses have been purchased that prohibit the usage optional shields from currently being installed on the new flyer buses because of federal ADA requirements. But we strongly believe that it should be the goal to provide an alternate way of providing protection. Whether it is putting the funds from the budget into additional officers, allowing additional hours for a greater presence on buses, trains, and stations, constant conflict resolution training for employees, or dedicated bus rail OCC controller to take calls of distress, all avenues should be provided to assure the safety of your employees from the smaller threat to the most deadly. It is time to stop minimizing the problem and develop out-of-the-box thinking for effective solutions. Jackie Jeter, President, ATU Local 689. And so, Jack, if you want to weigh in on any of the activity associated with the bus deals.
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank the chief for all the activities that we've been showed in enhancement in trying to provide safety. We agree totally with the chief that we one act of violence is too many. We want to do everything that we can to stop that. And again, I also thank Ms. Bowser for her meeting and involvement with the community and increased activities with MPD. I think that we have enhanced some of the relationships between bus communications and the police department to communicate better and to get more information, as much information as we can, to the police, but also to get feedback from the police once the incident has been investigated so that we have some feedback for our operators and our management staff. From the standpoint of bus shields, we had the opportunity when we purchased 30-foot buses, Orion buses, to purchase the shield that was had the potential for being optional. Optional meaning that if it's not in use and folded back, it doesn't block the aisleway. We installed those probably 15 months ago. There's 52 of those, some at Southern, some at Western, some at their Landover facility. The initial survey of the employees took place a couple months after they were installed, and the chief reported on the interest or lack of interest of the operators to use those. There's concerns for feeling confined, that it, you know, it's really not going to do something if somebody really wants to get to the operator. I think all of the comments are valid because it's a personal situation that a person goes through. I think senior operators, in my opinion, usually have the feeling that they can generally talk their way through an incident and that they prefer not to have the shield. The comments about optional is the issue. The Orion bus is built in such a way, and we have 500 or so of these buses, that it, you can install a shield that does not have to be in place to be at all times. On our new Flyer buses, we've looked throughout the industry. We've looked with manufacturers, people that build shields in the garage. We've looked at every opportunity to try to find a shield that could be optional if we decided to install more shields. We've not been able to find any. We're working with the coalition of all of the larger transit agencies on the East Coast, looking for input and involvement and trying to find different ways of doing things. But so far, we've been unable to do that. What happens with a shield on a new Flyer bus is when it's not in place, protecting the operator, it sticks out into the aisle and minimizes the width of the aisle, which minimizes our defeats our ability to meet ADA requirements for getting wheelchairs down the aisle. So we continue to look. We continue to look at options. But in addition, we're also, we've instituted a new training program for our operators called We Care. It's a program that operators are going through and taking a day, trying to discuss different ways in which operators can communicate with customers, prepare themselves for boarding passengers, be observant of what's happening, put a smile on your face, say good morning. You know, as some of the comments are, it's pretty hard to hit somebody if they're smiling at you. So we're, you know, we're trying to go through a program that's been well received by the operators. We had 392 operators through it through the first month of the program. And we're hoping to get at least 1,500 operators through that program in calendar year 2013. And again, we're working with the chief. We're working with anyone else that you know, we can provide programs that will support the operator and protect the customer in matters of violence. You know, part one is stealing an iPhone is bad, but, you know, it just scares me every time windows are broken, objects come through the bus, you know, it has the potential of damaging not only customers, operators, and that bus gets out of service, and, you know, for the next hour or so, there may not be any service on a route as a result of having to change out the bus, change out the operator, be involved in the investigation. So it has a big impact on the system, and, you know, we're attempting to do everything we can, working with anyone we can to try to minimize those type of events.
And, again, I can't say enough about the leadership of Board Member Bowser on a Monday night in which the Redskins was playing. It was a 4.5-5 hour attempt to listen to all that were there, the community. Reverend Harrison extended his congregation to us. Jack, people from Bus, Kathy Lanier was there. Councilmember Barry was there. And there were also discussions about the community standing up and doing what they needed to do to change the idea of having kids throwing rocks. And so we can't say enough about you being there, leading that effort. We had a vocal group from our bus operators who were adamant about making sure that we change things. And probably one of the most difficult jobs there is in transit is probably a bus operator, when you have to ask someone for their fares, and they argue and complain, and now they sit behind you, and you don't know what exactly they're going to do. So thanks very much again, Ms. Bowser, for your contributions to that. One of the other items that's listed in the external partnering is that we have taken a partnering with the Metropolitan Police again to establish a vandalism prevention campaign featuring the poster shown here and some other handouts for the schools in the District of Columbia. This has been sent out to various schools. We are attending assemblies because we want to get the young people involved. It's taxpayers' monies that Jack is repairing all of these windshields and windows and things of that nature. Again, the rock throwing campaign poster was designed in collaboration with the Metropolitan Police to make offenders aware of the penalty for committing such acts. These posters are given to customers during customer outreach events, and these posters are also on display at recreation centers throughout the city as well as local schools. The community outreach, we periodically have a meet the MTP, and we continue to receive positive feedback. This is where the Metro Transit Police Command officials, to include myself, conduct outreach at key stations during the mornings and evening rush hour. This provides an opportunity to provide feedback to the leadership of the police department, and it's an ongoing effort that will continue. In addition to this effort, we MTP officials participate in a wide variety of community meetings. We probably attend throughout each jurisdiction's more community meetings than you can imagine, because everybody has a concern about safety or security on the metro in their respective jurisdictions. Traditionally, these meetings are hosted by the Metropolitan Police in their public service areas, which are called PSAs, and this provides another opportunity to receive feedback with metro-specific concerns customers have. As we discussed earlier, our youth forum initiatives helps foster ideas that are being considered to further enhance our relationship with young riders, to include social media outlets, having youth compete to create a public service announcement to be played in the stations on the buses, and design crime prevention brochures. Plans are underway to have additional meetings in the near future. And finally, the Metro Transit Police is aggressively partnering with the D.C. Public Schools and the Metropolitan Police to actively participate in school assemblies. And this concludes my presentation. And thanks for everybody, internal, Jack, Bus, Jackie Jeter, everybody concerned, that we have a commitment to make the bus as safe as possible.
Thank you, Chief. I think it's a good, comprehensive presentation. Clearly identifies all the attention that's being put to this, and I hope that that will be successful. Let me also thank Ms. Bowser for her contribution to this. I think it brought the public to become a partner with us in how we deal with an issue that affects not just us, but our customers. Are there questions for the Chief?
Let me just say thank you to the Chief for your comprehensive report, but more than that, the actions that that are behind it. I think it's critically important, and we're certainly committed in the district. We don't regard this as a metro problem. We regard it as everyone's problem, and our chief feels the same way, and our chancellor of schools feels the same way, and this will be the first of many efforts, but I appreciate Metro stepping up to the plate. We know if bus drivers don't feel safe, the riders don't feel safe, and people around the buses and transit facilities don't feel safe, and we're committed to changing that.
Any other questions? If not, 11 o'clock, and we'll call the meeting adjourned.